When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're listening to All the Books, a weekly show of recommendations and enthusiasm regarding the week's new book releases. This is episode 246, and today we are talking about books being released on February 11th, 2020, and more. I'm Liberty Hardy, here with Kelly Jensen, and we're coming to you from BookRiot.com. Hello!
Hi!
This is your supposedly last second Tuesday of the month.
Yeah.
You'll be moving to the first Tuesday of the month.
Yes, I will. Yeah.
I just put my head down and read and people tell me things. That's basically what happens.
I need to, like, I have a hard time scheduling, like, my reading. So it's more helpful for me to know it's the first week of the month rather than the second week because I get so confused.
It's hard. Like, occasionally I'll be like, oh my goodness, I missed this thing. And I'll realize it's because I'm already, like, reading ahead and I'm also recording podcasts a week or two ahead. So those things haven't actually happened yet. But in my mind, I've missed them. I've called doctor's appointments and been like, I'm so sorry. They're like, yeah, no, you're fine. Oops. But, you know, other things that are weird in the world. We are recording this the day after we were going to record it because yesterday it was a balmy 50 degrees in Maine and my neighbors were doing yard work. They were had leaf blowers. They were raking. They were yelling and having a great time. And so we were like, well, let's do it today. Overnight in Maine, got a snowstorm, 4 inches of snow, currently still snowing, plow trucks, people outside yelling, throwing snow at each other. It's like, if you don't believe climate change is real, I have something to tell you.
Yeah. And I was telling Liberty yesterday, like, our winter here in the Midwest hasn't been too bad, knock on wood, but it's weird because we had a white Halloween, and we're talking, like, 6 to 8 inches of snow. This was not just, like, light dusting. And then Christmas was in the 50s, and we went for a hike outside. So, like, you know, that doesn't feel right.
It's all backwards.
Yeah.
Nobody knows anymore. We are going to talk about books, but one more thing I wanted to mention. I'm super jealous that you live in Groundhog Day town.
Oh, I know. It is the coolest.
That new commercial is amazing.
Yeah. What's amazing to me is I was actually out of town when it was recording. Like, everybody knew that there was a Jeep commercial being recorded downtown. Downtown would be closed. And I was out of town. So when I saw stuff start popping up in my local Facebook group about Bill Murray being in town, I was like, why am I not there? And that's when everybody kind of figured out it was a Groundhog Day commercial for Jeep. And so everybody was eagerly awaiting to see what that would look like. And not only was it awesome, I think it was my favorite commercial, but they really stuck to the film. And also, this is a thing that has blown my mind. They turned that commercial around in under a week because they filmed it the Saturday before the Super Bowl.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, so they were putting teasers out the Thursday beforehand, which means they turned that thing around in like 4 or 5 days.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
I was saying this to you earlier. Like, I admire that they went to your town where Groundhog Day, the movie, was filmed and did this because they don't have to now. They could have done that whole thing, like, on a stage with a green screen and, like, never left, you know, where I think he lives in Brooklyn. Like, they could have gone to Brooklyn and shot it there, you know? I mean, I think it's admirable that they brought the business to town. That's really great.
And they, there were a couple of pieces that came out afterward talking about how the commercial was really about fan service, which is why Bill did it at all. And, like, my town does a big Groundhog Day celebration every year, which is bananas. Like, I love it. It's such a joy to see people out the first weekend of February, like, outside to go see a groundhog and then to go see all the film sites. And we have, like, plaques around town that say things like, this is where, you know, Ned stepped in a puddle, and the B&B where Bill stays, Phil Connors in the movie stays, is a real B&B. I actually get my massages there, so I get to, like, go to Groundhog Day house all the time. It's just, it's really cool, and it's cool that he came and did that. And everybody who said he like stopped into their business said he was just really awesome and spent a lot of money. Like he really like supports the community that he was working in. So we have a lot of good feelings for Bill Murray here.
That's awesome. Two things that I enjoy about 2020 so far. Bill Murray.
Yep.
Baby Yoda. That's about
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Books. All things that start with B.
Books, Baby Yoda, Bill Murray.
There we go. I'm there with you.
All right. Speaking of books, I guess we should talk about them now. Or actually, we're going to hear from a sponsor and then we'll talk about books. Oh.
Today's episode is brought to you by Entangled Publishing's Red Tower Books, publisher of the smash hit Fourth Wing. You'll only cross these blades once in a page-turning new tale of revenge, strategy, and so many lies. Best-selling Red Tower Books is releasing its next irresistible read that will capture your imagination and keep you guessing until the end. Mae Corlin's Five Broken Blades tells an intricate high-stakes tale of five total strangers united in a plot that will test their strength, wits, and courage. Each has their reasons, all have secrets. But while it's easy to betray a stranger, it's not so simple to stab a friend or a lover, okay, in the back. Now these five blades must choose between vengeance and one another. Pick up Five Broken Blades by Mae Corlin for a thrilling, adventurous tale filled with risk, romance, adventure, and, oh, so many lies. The relationships in it are complex and nuanced and involve everything from friends to enemies, found and biological family and lovers and more. Thanks again to Entangled Publishing's Red Tower Books, publishers of the smash hit Fourth Wing, for sponsoring this episode.
Okay, so my first pick for today is Book with a Capital B because it is 600 something pages long. Mm. It's enormous. I have mentioned how excited I was to receive this, how excited I was to read this, and now you also get a chance. It is The Unwilling by Kelly Braffett. Another B word. It's all about the Bs. So I love Kelly Braffett. I think she is a phenomenal writer. She's written Save Yourself, Last Scene Leaving, Josie and Jack, which was recently turned into a film, which I cannot wait to see. I just think she is such an amazing writer. There are always like these very dark literary fiction novels. And this time she has turned her attention to high fantasy, very dark high fantasy. She calls it unhappy people making bad decisions, but this time with magic, which is basically what this is. It's like a very literary speculative fiction novel. And it's about mainly about two characters. There's Judah, who is a young woman. She is a member of High Falls royal family. She was fostered by the royal family. On the night that she was born, the queen also gave birth to a boy named Gavin. And when the midwife went to deliver Gavin, it was discussed that, you know, Judah had been born and she was going to be without a family. And so the queen wanted to adopt her, especially when it was learned that for some reason, Judah and Gavin have a bond. They're not twins. They're not related, but they have this bond somehow, like twins. Like when one gets hurt, the other feels it. Like, and it's very serious. So like if anything was to happen to Judah, something would happen to Gavin. And so they need to keep Judah around and keep her safe. And Gavin's father hates this. Like he does not want Judah around, but he can't get rid of her without something happening to his son. So she's just kind of there. She's stuck there is how he sees it. And she's very unusual. Like the family all has very pale skin, very pale hair. Judah has hair the color of blood and it makes her stick out and people are afraid of her. But, you know, she has Gavin and then two other siblings and they're all very protective of her. And at least she has like that bond. The other character is Nate, who is a healer. And we learn from a very young age, he was trained to do magic and to be a healer. And he has gone to the city to find Judah and sort of become a part of her life and convince her that she has a destiny that she needs to fulfill. Like he knows more about Judah than she even knows because she doesn't really know much about her background. And so he needs to help her fulfill her destiny. So like I said, this is dark. I've seen a lot of people complaining online about the violence. There's trigger warnings for animal cruelty, abuse, sexual assault. I mean, it is very, very dark. I also find them to be like very like all these people who are upset about what's happening in this book seem to love Game of Thrones books. And like if you've read Game of Thrones, this is like exactly the same kind of thing. Like, you're not getting anything that George R.R. Martin didn't do. But for some reason, people are more upset that it's in this book. So like I said, it, you know, trigger warnings if you're sensitive to any of those things, because there is a lot of it. She is an A+ writer, A++. I mean, she's so fantastic. And also, I will say, this is way more character driven, and she spends a lot of time on the world building. It's exquisite, but it's way more character driven than plot driven. So it moves at a leisurely pace. So if you're like looking for like fast action for a whole 600 pages, that's not going to happen. And also if you need things to be resolved, it's kind of a little, so some questions at the end, because I believe it's going to be a series. But it's so beautiful. And I don't know, I feel like the world is a hot mess and just getting like hot messier, but I enjoyed reading this book about worlds where everything is complicated and we become very emotionally invested in these characters and like bad things happen all the time. And I don't know, I just enjoyed that it wasn't happening in like a realistic world. And so it was just an escape, and I love her. I could just talk about her forever. She is the most talented member of that family. It is The Unwilling by Kelly Bravitt.
My first pick is also a bigger book, not as long as that one, but it's Yes, No, Maybe So by Becky Albertalli and Aisha Saeed. It came out last week, but I wanted to talk about it because I love this book. So the story follows two different voices. The first is Jamie, and Jamie's cousin is running for a local election seat, and Jamie's been roped into helping with this campaign. He is being asked to canvass and go door to door, but it's the last thing in the world that he wants to do. Then there's Maya, whose parents are in the midst of a trial separation, and that means that their normal ways of practicing Ramadan and celebrating Eid are out the window. And Maya's really feeling unmoored and abandoned by her best friend. And her best friend's getting ready to go to college and has a lot of things going on, and time with Maya isn't one of them. So when Maya bumps into Jamie, who she hasn't seen since they were kids, he convinces her to join him in canvassing so that the two of them can catch up. Maya is also not super stoked about canvassing, but she's game, and it'll help get her mind off things. And she also knows that, thanks to her mother suggesting this, if she can make it through the summer canvassing, then maybe her mom will help get her a car, which will give her a little bit more mobility and the chance to get out and about. So things aren't smooth sailing necessarily as Jamie and Maya go door to door, especially in the more conservative areas of their district. At the same time, there's an Islamophobic house bill in the state senate, state house, and it's paired with a local anti-Semitic campaign, and it puts both Jamie, who is Jewish, and Maya in a really unique position, not just of fear and hurt, but of potentially being able to encourage really big change with their work canvassing. So together they agree that they're going to work hard to get Jamie's cousin elected and also to take down this discriminatory house bill and shed light on who or what group is leaving this hate around town. So super serious stuff going on, but it's also a romantic comedy. And Jamie and Maya are both tentative about who they are individually and who they are collectively and who they are sort of in the grander scheme of the political realities of their world. And we get to see how both of their faces play into their everyday life and how many ways they can make mistakes with one another in terms of trying to honor one another's belief systems. But they learn and they learn which rules and practices are worth breaking in the name of their beliefs and their feelings for each other. At times, this book is laugh out loud funny, and both Maya and Jamie have this fondness for spending time at Target that I think is extremely like hashtag relatable content. They're passionate and hardworking despite how many challenges are going on in their personal lives. It's not necessarily going to end the way that the two of them would like things to end with the campaign, but that's not to say that they don't make impact and create change in their world. It's really full of heart, thoughtful explorations of politics, and really well-rounded and compelling characters. And I just found this book to be a total delight from start to finish. Saeed and Albertalli's styles mesh really, really well, and the perspectives that they bring to their characters is really authentic and meaningful. One of my favorite characters, though, is Jamie's grandma, who is an Instagram fanatic and influencer, and her Instagram name is Instagram. Oh. She's a total delight through and through, and I love how she's given her own plot line and the chance to be a hero in this story, too. That is Yes, No, Maybe So by Becky Albertalli and Aisha Saheed.
I'm excited to read that one. I haven't gotten to it yet because I know you were going to talk about it, so...
Oh, so good.
I'm holding on to it.
Yeah.
My next pick is another book. It's been like a month and I no longer remember what books I chose for like the most anticipated reads, but I think this was one as well. It is And I Do Not Forgive You, Stories and Other Revenges by Amber Sparks. This book, first of all, let's talk about the cover. It is fluorescent pink with a purple axe on the front. It is amazing. And also, I thought it was the brightest colored book I have ever owned until yesterday. I got When We Were Magic by Sarah Gailey in the mail, which is like fluorescent Play-Doh red. And I was like, okay, this book is even brighter, but these covers, I love the fluorescent covers. But moving on, fluorescent pink, axe, here we go. Okay, so Amber Sparks is an incredible writer. I first heard about her when she did a chat book with Robert Kloss, who wrote The Alligators of Abraham, which you have heard me talk about 500,000 times. And we discussed her book, The Unfinished World and Other Stories, a few years ago when that came out. This one is a shorter collection with fiercer stories that sort of mix fairy tales and myths with the experiences of women throughout history. I came across this. I've been waiting for her new book, and I came across a copy when I was at NEBA last fall, and the rep for Live Right was like, I read this book, and I could hear my blood sizzling as I read it. And I was like, well, that is an endorsement. It is so fantastic. So these are short stories. And in the second story, I think, second or third story, she mentions like history likes to lie about women. And this is basically taking on that idea. I'll say the first story is about two friends who are like perfect for each other. They're so close. They're like sisters. They share everything. They tell each other everything. You know, they have secrets that they don't tell anyone else. And all of a sudden, one of them ghosts the other one. And it's about like how the other friend is like, I don't know what I did. I don't know what I said. I don't, you know, and that story. Oh, I almost had to just lay down on the floor and say, I give up right there because it nearly killed me. I mean, you're like, oh, it's so stressful and amazing and true. And I was just like, okay, I would buy this book just for this story. I would buy this book just for the cover. I would buy this book just for the titles of the stories. The titles of the stories are amazing. I'll get to that in a minute. But like this story nearly killed me. And I was like, that is some writing like right there. But I mean, they're amazing. Like there's one that's like a clickbait article that it's called You Won't Believe What Really Happened to the Sabine Women. And there's one about a young girl who befriends a ghost during this not great experience she has growing up in a mobile home park. There's bumps in the night. There's technology issues. There's magical realism. It's basically these women. There's lots of stories about women who like lived in the shadows of men, you know, like doing all these things. But of course, they don't get any credit for it. And when they say like, you know, you read something and you could cut yourself on it. It's so sharp. That is this book. These stories are so amazing. And I wanted to tell you, the title of a story. My favorite title is In Which Athena Designs a Video Game with the Express Purpose of Trolling Her Father, which is just awesome. And she's just so, so funny and smart and clever. I love this book. I'm not going to say much more about it because it is very short. So it is And I Do Not Forgive You, Stories and Other Revenges by Amber Sparks.
My next pick is The Falcon Thief, A True Tale of Adventure, Treachery, and the Hunt for the Perfect Bird by Joshua Hammer. And this is a really breathlessly paced adventure story set recently, and it's 100% true. This is the kind of bloodless true crime that I find fascinating and engaging, and this one would be especially great to pass on to anybody who loved The Feather Thief, which we were big fans of at Book Riot when that came out a couple years ago. So in May 2010, Jeffrey Lendrum was arrested in the UK at an airport after a security guard in one of the lounges thought something suspicious was going on. So Lendrum had left his partner in the lounge when he went into the bathroom for 20 minutes. The guard went in after and noticed that nothing had been touched while he was in there. No shower, no running water, but there was a suspicious looking egg in the garbage can. And before long, it was discovered that Lendrum had numerous eggs secured to his body. along with numerous eggs in his luggage. They were the eggs of falcons, each of which, were they to make it alive to his destination in Dubai, would have net him a lot of money from political leaders in the region who practiced the art and sport of falconry. So then from here, the book follows the rise of falconry, particularly in the Middle East, and how it ties into history in that region, as well as how it is Landrum got caught up in the theft of some of the world's most rare raptor eggs, and how he traversed some of the most dangerous places in the world in order to steal these eggs and make a profit. It's super fascinating and super infuriating. Not only because of how it plays into the ways that it disturbs nature and causes further harm to hurting species, but also because Lendrum's passion for nature is very, very palpable, but goes so off course from his young days in South Africa. I absolutely love books that marry true crime and history like this. Like, it scratches such an itch. And this one, besides its obvious exploration of theft of eggs, has some real moments worth noting about animal harm. But it's one that I think those who are sensitive to animal harm might be able to stomach without too much problem. It's less about humans doing harm to living animals and more about animals doing harm to their own kind, minus the egg thing, of course. I think Hammer offers a really fair assessment of why Lendrum would partake in stealing these eggs while balancing the history and legacy of falconry in the Middle East. It's not an apology or an excuse for any of the behavior, but it gives a lot of context and conjecture for the whys, and particularly where Hammer was unable to get first-hand information, so he has to come up with his own explanation for some of the things that he couldn't get via interviews or primary sources. I blew through this one and will forever, like Hammer himself, will look at birds in a new way. I loved it. And that is The Falcon Thief, A True Tale of Adventure, Treachery, and the Hunt for the Perfect Bird by Joshua Hammer.
That's another one I look forward to reading. I quizzed you on it before.
Yeah. And I think you'll totally be able to handle it. Like the egg theft is harm to animals, but actual like harm to living, breathing animals is more of like what you'd see on a nature show of, you know, what animals do to each other versus like a human doing something cruel to them.
Yeah, I look forward to that one as well. My next pick is Untamed Shore by Silvia Moreno Garcia. Love her books. If the name sounds familiar, she has written Certain Dark Things, which is like a vampire novel, A Gods of Jade and Shadow, which came out last year, which is the like Cinderella during the jazz age in Mexico City, which is fantastic. The Beautiful Ones, which is also really great. And she has another one coming out called Mexican Gothic this summer that I just got a copy of yesterday. Very excited to read, along with that fluorescent red book. So apparently it was a good mail day for me yesterday. This one is set in 1979 in Baja California, which is in Mexico, right on the border of California. I love that the setting is like 1979. I was like, okay, I could not tell you anything about 1979 without doing, even though I was alive then. I mean, I was very small, but like, I don't remember anything. But this is about an 18-year-old woman named Viridiana. She's 18. She lives with her mother and her stepfather and her siblings in a very, 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 very small town off the main path, which does not get much business or any adventure or nothing really is going on. And she's trying to fight against what is expected of her. She is supposed to, because she's 18 now, she's supposed to like be getting married and having children. Like that is what the women in the and the men in her village think that is expected of her. And she does not want to do that. She is friends with a Dutch man who lives in their town, who pays her to visit him once a week and give him English lessons, but she realizes like it's less about him learning English, he already knows English, and more about just the companionship and her learning Dutch, Spanish lessons. He's teaching her English and Dutch. The man was friends with her father, who abandoned them when she was very young, so she thinks like he feels a little guilty about that and, you know, kind of looks out for her. So, like I said, they don't have a lot of business going on, but then the Dutchman tells her that these three tourists are coming to town and renting a house for the summer, and one of the men is a writer, and he needs an assistant, and he thinks that she should take the job. So she goes out there to see what's going on. It's like the house is way off the main road. it's not easily, you can't like access it easily, and it's kind of a pain to get to. And so when she goes out there, she meets an older man, and then his very lovely young wife and her very lovely brother. And, you know, he said, they say, like, we need you to live here for the summer. You know, you won't be going back and forth to the village, because the writer is like, I like to work in the middle of the night and I need my assistant, you know, whenever I feel like writing. So, you know, will you live here with us? And first she's like, I don't know. But she's quickly swayed by their glamour and their excessive wealth. So she says yes. Long story short, one of them dies. I'm not going to tell you who it is because I feel like it spoils the story. But one of them dies, and Vera Deanna lies about what happens, thinking it's the right thing to do, and is quickly caught up in a web of lies. And there are then plot twists that I didn't see coming. And it's great. It's about one of those books about, like, you know, when a young person dreams of escape, you know, and also one of those books. I enjoy these books when, like, you as a reader know that this person or this situation is not as great as the main character thinks it is. But Vera Deanna is so, like, she just wants to have an exciting life, and she wants to get out of her village, that, you know, she thinks everything is going to be great, and she's completely, like, snowed over, like, bowled over, snowed, I'm going to combine those two, by these people. And what happens sort of, like, forces her to learn what she is really made of, because she has now gotten herself in a situation that is quickly coming apart. I also love one of those, like, the glamour of rich people, you know, like the Magus or the Talented Mr. Ripley, you know, like glamorous people being pretty awful, but, you know, the main character is being like, oh, you know, completely taken with them. I like a book like that. So this is really great. It is it's called Untamed Shore by Sylvia Moreno Garcia. We are going to hear from another sponsor. Okay, now it's you. It's your turn.
It's me. My next pick is Turtle Under Ice by Julia Del Rosario. And the story starts with Ariana disappearing. It's her sister Ro who's the first to discover this, but Ro can't find any clues as to where her sister might be. Told in two voices in verse, this is a really heartfelt story about grief and the ways that it can manifest and emerge so differently for different people. So when Ro and Ariana's stepmother loses her 12-week pregnancy, Ariana spirals into grief as the wounds of losing her mom 6 years prior and being the person with her as she died really reemerged for her. And Ro is finding sadness welling up inside her too, but she takes it out by turning deep into her love of soccer, and she becomes really invested in becoming the best player that she possibly can be. For her, whenever she's on the field, she feels the presence of her mother with her. And so with the help of her friend Kennedy, Ro begins to look for her sister. And it's here when we see the wells of her own sadness really emerge, particularly as Kennedy gets overbearing in relation to why it is she didn't know Ro's stepmother had been pregnant. It's this really a powerful scene where Kennedy's going on and on, like, how did I not know your stepmom was 12 weeks pregnant? And how dare you not tell me? And blah, 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 blah. And Ro really has this reckoning of, like, one, it's none of your business. And two, like, can we grieve without being accused of, you know, withholding information? So Ariana's voice is present in the story, though it is told primarily through flashbacks. She has hopped on a bus, and we know that there's some kind of piece of artwork in her lap. A few stops in, she runs into a best friend who gets on the bus, and she, Ariana, begins to share the story of how their friendship faltered. Ariana wanted to be so mired in her grief that she couldn't understand other people, including this friend, as they dealt with their own personal losses in ways that she didn't quite understand. So Ro finds Ariana, and at the end of the book, there's this really beautiful reflection of friendship and sisterhood and the ways that loss and sadness can tie and untie people as much as hurt and divide them. I feel like Rosario nails grief so perfectly and offers a ton of ways that we can be really cruel and isolating toward others as much as the ways we can seek the comfort of a loved one through things we cherish. So for Ariana, it turns out art has become this really therapeutic way for her to deal with grief. And she never really anticipated that until Ro shares how much pouring herself into soccer has meant that she never has to lose the presence of her mother. I love the verse in this book, and the story is really tightly told over less than a single day. So much happens in just a few short hours. But within that day, we get to see such a large expanse of life for both Ro and Ariana. And both are girls of color who are part Filipino, and their ethnicity is something that really furthers this theme throughout the book of grief and the different ways that it can look culturally, the different ways it can look individually. And as somebody who is recently dealing with a really big loss of my own, it really hit me in a lot of tender places. And I felt both of the girls' pain really acutely and saw their methods of working through that as things that I've used myself and continue to use. And it nailed all of those feelings. This is a quick read, but it's not one that's slight by any means. And that is Turtle Under Ice by Julia Del Rosario.
Okay, my last pick today is also a very quick read. It's a very small book. Apparently, I'm all about the small books this time. Oh, wait, except for The Unwilling, which is...
Except for the first one.
So I kind of like balance, like the average probably works out really well. So my last pick is Weather by Jenny Offal. And I have been anticipating a new book from her, as have many, 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 many people. Basically, I don't have to say anything else if you're a Jenny Offal fan. If you love the Department of Speculation, that's all you need to hear is that her new book is out today. But I will continue to tell you about it because it's great. It is the same format as Department of Speculation. She writes in these very sharp, tight little vignettes, these little tiny bites on the page. That's so great. It's about a librarian named Lizzie, who also, on top of being a librarian, sort of gives advice to her patrons and also to her family. Her brother is recovering from a substance addiction, and Lizzie has a lot of advice for people. She also lives with her husband and her young son, and, you know, life is just kind of going along like that. And then she gets a call from her mentor, or a message from her mentor, Sylvia, who has a very famous podcast, and she asks Lizzie to work for her answering her mail. She gets all this mail, like, from people who are, you know, like, really upset about this side of the world in that we live in, or the other side. And, you know, like, anything from, like, climate change to, you know, incels to all kinds of things that that are polarizing the country. And so Lizzie goes and she does this job. She's, like, now answering people's questions about contemporary times and the increasingly polarized country. And she becomes quite interested in doomsday preppers. And it awful kind of looks at, like, how do you return to your life when you spend so much time staring into this abyss, basically, of people who are hurt and confused and angry and just mad about the world. And, you know, like, how do you, like, look at your life and feel like things are going to be okay? It's so good. And she writes these sentences that, you know, I feel this way about a few writers where you read them and you're like, oh, yes, I feel that way, or I think that, but I've never been able to say it out loud because I just can't figure out how. And then there it is right there on the page. Someone else has had this thought and can express it in a way that I cannot. It's incredibly thought-provoking and beautiful. And like I said, very, very short. It is Weather by Jenny Offal.
My last pick is The Rise and Fall of Charles Lindbergh by Candace Fleming. And I'll start by saying my knowledge of Lindbergh was pretty limited when I picked up this book, other than knowing he had something to do with flight and that there was a Lindbergh baby situation. So I went into this wanting to know more about those, but more than that, I wanted to see how Fleming took his story and made it relevant today. Like, why now? Why write this book now? How does it tie into anything going on in the world today? And I was really impressed. This is less a book about Lindbergh's story and more about how he became such a celebrity in the American eye and had influence on a number of political situations in the 30s and 40s. So Fleming starts by giving us insight into Lindbergh's really privileged childhood growing up on the Mississippi River in Minnesota, where he had a politician for a father and an extremely doting mother. His mom was so doting, in fact, that when Charles decided he was going to attend college at the University of Wisconsin in Madison, she went with him so they could live together. He didn't last at that school long, as tended to be his way with formal education. He decided he was fascinated with flight and realized that he wanted to learn to do it. So he then moved again and attended flight school and eventually took over a mail route between St. Louis and Chicago. And it was here he realized yet another dream. He wanted to be the first transcontinental flight going from New York City to Paris. When he is successful doing this, he becomes more and more well known to the American public, to the point where he and his family needed to relocate in order to achieve any semblance of privacy. He, of course, loved this attention, even if he pretended otherwise, but it was this fame that led to his one-year-old son being kidnapped and murdered. So Lindbergh and his wife Anne were making names for themselves when they moved to the UK, and it's here when Lindbergh becomes fascinated with the Nazi regime in Germany. And turns out he was a eugenist, and the Nazi showmanship of Berlin and the way their country quote-unquote looked to him was what he believed an ideal world would look like. Never mind that he'd been completely fooled by the Nazis, but being a eugenist, he also did believe in white supremacy, and this only helped fuel his racism and his bigotry in a really, really big way. So Lindbergh then returns to the U.S., and he finds himself unable to rally supporters for his quote-unquote America First beliefs, if that sounds familiar. And he decides that he is ready to take on a role in America's entrance in World War II in kind of an unexpected way. Fleming's book is really, really fair and offers a really interesting perspective on the good things Lindbergh did, as well as the reality of the dark side of who he was. He's neither lauded nor chided. He's presented as he was, in his complexities and his nuances, in his strengths and in his shortcomings. It was impressive. I have one little quibble, and that's just because I found this so fascinating. At the end of the book, there's some details about he apparently had three secret families, and that's just brought up, but like not gone into in depth. I'm assuming part of it has to do with some of these people who may have been part of a secret family or are still alive. So it might have just been an issue of privacy and protection. But I was super impressed with how Fleming made Lindbergh's story parallel today's celebrity politicians and their beliefs. This is a really excellent example of what YA nonfiction does, and I love too the inclusion of photos in this book. It really added another level to the story. If you've ever been curious about what well-written, compelling, narratively driven YA nonfiction looks like, maybe for the Read Harder Challenge this year, I cannot recommend The Rise and Fall of Charles Lindbergh by Candace Fleming enough.
That's fantastic. I, as a young child, was completely fascinated with the Lindbergh baby case. Like, I read everything that I could about it, but I did not know anything else about him other than, you know, like, flew planes, broke records. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like, I want to read this book.
Yeah, it's funny. I was talking about this on the Hey YA podcast, and you know, you talk about all the positive stuff first, and Eric goes, I was hoping that you were going to talk about the bad stuff, and I said, please, I wouldn't talk about a book that, like, presents somebody in just one, you know, rosy color, like, and Fleming has written a number of these books. She wrote one on Barnum that was also the same way, and just, like, you know, all these cool things he did, but also, like, all of the terrible beliefs and practices he had at the same time. And there's something about reading a book like that that offers you both that is just so powerful, because it makes you better understand just how complex and nuanced and, you know, full of fault even these people who are seen as heroes really are.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a lot harder to know things about people very quickly, you know, from the old times than it is now.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
they're not tweeting things that they're deleting or
right. There aren't screenshots.
Yeah, like it's so like you learn things. You're like, huh. You know, I can't imagine now, like, what it would be like to live in that world.
Yeah.
You know, where we don't know everything immediately. I watch old movies now and I'm like, yeah, none of this would be possible today. Because
right.
Someone would
right.
just be like, let me text you the answer.
Right. And let me tie this back in neatly to where we started the show. Groundhog Day would never work in today's world.
Nope. Just wouldn't.
Which is a bummer. But, you know.
It's fun to dream.
It is.
All right. So those are fun. What a great variety we had today.
Yeah.
If I do say so myself, I'm going to pat myself on the back. I'm going to virtually pat
Samesies.
You on the back. I'm going to pat everybody on the back with consent. So tell me what you're going to read next.
So I'm in the middle of Not So Pure and Simple by Lamar Giles, which is his first contemporary book. And it's awesome. It's this teenage boy has a crush on a girl and accidentally takes a purity pledge at his church, thinking that it'll help him grow closer to her. But spoiler alert, it doesn't. Funny, but also a really great read about toxic masculinity and about sex, particularly when it comes to black boys, which is not a thing you see very much in YA fiction.
I love his books. He's like getting up there with like Jason Reynolds, like cranking them out 2 or 3 a year now. And it's great. You know, they've all been fantastic. So I just love him. I'm going to attempt to read The Great Offshore Grounds by Vanessa Veselka, but it's one of those books where I've been waiting for this novel for so long, like literally since 2013 when she first mentioned that she was writing it, that when I got it in the mail the other day, they sent me an early manuscript. I just squealed and rolled around and kicked my feet. And I don't know that, like, I'll be able to read it yet because I'm so excited. I don't know. There's occasionally, like, books like that. Like Elizabeth McCracken, when I get her books, I get so excited I have to, like, put them down for a while because I can't read them. And this might be one of them. Hopefully not. But you may have heard me mention her before. She wrote a book called Zazen, which came out, I think, in 2011, which is one of my very favorite books. It's one of my favorite books of the last decade. And so I was just over the moon when I opened this package, and literally, you probably heard me squealing from wherever you were. I really was like rolling on the floor, kicking my feet. I was so happy. My boyfriend is just like, yep, whatever now. Like, he's gotten quite used to it. You know, someday, like, I'm going to be crushed by a bookcase and squealing for help, and he's going to be like, yep, she got a book or something. You know, no, it's going to be like the girl who cried book, you know? It's just like, it's going to happen. But that is it for us today. Thank you to our sponsors. If you want to reach us, you can drop us a line at allthebooks@bookriot.com. You can find us online. Kelly and I mostly hang out on Instagram. Kelly is Hey Kelly Jensen, and I am Friends and Comes Alive. You can also give us a treat and go to Apple Podcasts and leave a rating or review. It helps other book lovers to find us. And as much as we would love to tell you about more books out today, we just don't have the time, but you can read about more titles out now in the show notes at bookriot.com/allthebooks, where you can also find a link to our weekly new books newsletter to learn about more new books. And in the meantime,
happy reading.